You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Boss Hog of Liberty podcast. This is episode number 325, my God, of East Internet's favorite podcast. Jeremiah Morrill, executive video producer, audio engineer. Zach Burcham is out of place. He's the flex hitter today.
Yep.
He's on camera. He's filling in for Dakota, who is off winning his Father of the Year trophy. So we have called up from the bullpen Sarah Potter Morrill. Welcome.
Thank you.
Woo, woo.
Doing a great job.
We're on the line now.
It's her first day of real training with the slightly new and revised and updated setup. It's a little easier now, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot easier.
A lot easier. No, you don't have to constantly create a new string of reference characters and drag them across and whatever else happens.
Flipping switches. I mean, I like the fun of trying to get all the little bar at the bottom changed and everything. I mean, it was the panic. It was real, but it was
pure stress and panic.
I mean, there's nothing like just a shot of adrenaline right in the middle of your Thursday night.
So our guest tonight is going to be the one and only Chris Wheeler. He's made the long journey about over here halfway to Dayton.
All the way from Pittsburgh. Childhood hometown of Jeff Gordon.
The in-between age there.
Yeah, they claim him, but he sure as heck ain't from there.
On account of the number of teeth he has, you can prove it.
Those are my people, man. I'm the only person that lives on the course at Pittsburgh National Golf Club membership, golf club, country club, and day spa.
And day spa.
It's a beautiful 9-hole facility.
What kind of services do they provide?
Only the best.
There's a bottle of lotion.
Can you walk across some hot coals at the day spa?
No. We keep that for the men's retreat.
All right. This show is about our lives in rural Indiana. We're here to push your boundaries and make you think as individuals. Sometimes we'll provoke you. Other times we'll make you laugh. But hopefully you'll always learn something new. What did we do? We did 15, 20 minutes on Patreon a moment ago. We talked roads. We talked racing. We told some stories. I don't know. Is there anything else of note there, Zach? It was worth it. It was a good conversation.
I can't remember what we talked about. I've already blacked it out.
You've been drinking heavily.
Yeah.
He's all hopped up on the root beer.
Two root beers in.
Fire brewed root beers.
If you want access to that extra special sauciness, patreon.com/bosshoggerliberty, and you can get that emailed directly to you. You get special access to a Facebook group that gets you the show notes each and every week, so you can follow along if there's any links, if there's any deep dive research that Dakota did. It's all there.
Or scroll way back and look for for Dakota's gender reveal, which is one of the funniest videos on the internet.
That is Zach's favorite. I
still scroll back and listen to it just for pure amusement.
I'm surprised you haven't saved it to your phone yourself.
I'll find a way. I should
make that your ringtone one day.
I should make that his ringtone if he ever called. He never calls me, but it would be pretty funny to. Yeah.
So you post this?
Yeah.
All right. So can we go grammatically correct on it, or do you want to leave it as it is? Because man, I've had so much anxiety since you sent this to me. Because you spelled carting with a C.
Right.
You said grammatics. So I'm like, let me look at this and figure out what he's talking about. And immediately I went to carting.
Like cart. So a cart with a C is like the Instacart app.
I know. So, okay. Momentarily, we're going to say thank you to those that donate $50 or more a month to the show. Christy Avery, our favorite Norwex dealer up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. John Phillips of Andy Moore Buick GMC and Fishers. So if you need a sweet, sweet ride, GMC or Buick or a fine used car, go see John. He's the sales manager down there. Tell him about Boss Hog or Jeremiah and he'll hook you up. And then Anthony Meyer, who is, he plays part support for Zach Burcham.
Yep. He identifies parts so I can chase down people who damaged my car.
So I did that for fun, Chris.
Okay. I saw it on the drive here. I thought I did it
because it's like ketchup, right? Nobody can decide how the hell you spell ketchup.
I get it.
Carting is the same thing.
No. Carting, only one way to spell it.
I realize I was in a go-kart when I was 5 years old, too. So this was just to see if we could stir some controversy.
I was like, dude, my anxiety on the way here with traffic was like,
he spelled it Pigeon Forge go-karting. That's what he spelled it. That's, I was going to say, where's the one place you might be able to find it spelled with a C? I'm like,
Branson.
Yeah. Yeah. places where the carts are next to a building where you can see Jesus singing.
The
bears dancing.
That's for championship. Those are the championship carts. Championship cars. My normal co-host Dakota. I think it was a 10.2 beer across the road here. So we're going to slur our words as we get going. The first time we had Kyle Robbins on, who's a Silver Crown driver, and now he's got his Ray Hall Letterman career, Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan career, brought to you by MyJack. He said USAC. It wasn't USAC. He just spelled it out. The USIC cars.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. It was fun. And then we've made fun of him for 4 years over it now. So
that's Robin Miller's. That was his second favorite most derogatory four-letter word in his alphabet. USAC. That's a fact. We did a roast for Uncle Bobby years ago when I was at Bell Helmets. We sponsored, like, you know, Platinum sponsored this event downtown at the Stutz. And I mean, these guys got up there and just roasted Uncle Bobby.
I mean, it'd be so hard to find good material on Uncle Bobby.
I mean,
very difficult.
Well, you know, and it just got after
Uncle Bobby is Bobby Unser.
Bobby Unser.
For those that are uninitiated.
The man invented everything. He invented air. He invented aerodynamics. Yeah. He invented stagger.
It was a little bit of turkey talk.
Yeah. I mean, constantly. And so, but Robin said he was telling a story about something in the USAC days, and he goes, such and such in USAC, you know, my second favorite four-letter word and the one that means the worst, or something like that. I'm like, this guy is such a legend.
Almost wore my Robert Miller for President t-shirt.
So you had some involvement and met my wife before I did.
Way before, bro.
Way early.
Way before.
Way early, when you were karting with a K.
Karting with a K, yeah.
Out here at Newcastle.
Long time ago, man. Like, even before even Newcastle opened, we were racing with the SIRA, so the Southern Indiana Racing Association.
You look like a Southern.
Yeah, totes. I'm from North Long Beach, California.
Still exchange those Christmas years were. Snoop Dogg.
That was forever ago. Yeah, dude, me and Snoop D-O-double-G, we're good. We used to run a street racing series, man. Like, before Newcastle was around, we literally would run 16 to 17 races a year in towns just like Newcastle, where we're at right here, where we would shut down the downtown.
And you go to...
And we'd run a street race.
Just build a track.
Goodland, Indiana.
Goodland slaps.
Or Clinton, Indiana.
Oh, I know Clinton. They paint their curbs like Italians.
You'll like Linton. We had a race in Linton, Indiana as well.
We did. That's where your parents...
my mom got injured.
So
that's where your parents did the Flip Cup Nationals.
Oh.
Clinton, Indiana was like the Long Beach or the Nashville. And then they said, no, we're going to build Road America at Newcastle.
Yeah, so when Mark Dismore and his family, you know, put that together, it changed karting. It changed the future of karting in the Midwest. You know, because the Midwest was known for the dirty guys, the street racers. Man, we were rough. Like, we'd run for decent money every week. Somebody'd put up money for a win here, money for a win there. But, like, you won the race or you came back with a broken bone. Like, it was sketch town. And
I did not know they street raced go karts.
Oh, dude, it's so legit. That's, like,
I want to see it. That sounds awesome.
Anybody get a chance?
In the early 90s, my parents came and visited Indiana trying to decide. They were GM transfers, trying to decide where they're going to live. And I think they were in Richmond. This is probably 92, 93. And there was a street race in Richmond. Straw bales.
Yeah. Dude, it was hay bales and snow fencing. We didn't have the Tech Pro barriers.
I mean, I'm already like visualizing a course in downtown Newcastle, and we could have a pretty sick one.
At the next station identification, I'm going to show you a video. And for those of you that are listening that have never heard of this, if you go to YouTube after the show's over, do not leave us. And Mike Burrell, B-U-R-R-E-L-L, Goodland Grand Prix onboard. Search that one. That's a race I was in with Mike years ago. Heck, nowadays it's probably 15 years ago. It's a really cool onboard of just showing what Goodland was like, and then a very close call when it all ended. but wild, I mean, that's what we did, though. And then we got to Newcastle, and it really changed, and a lot of us had to just get better.
You went from the short tracks to the high speed technical.
Yeah. I mean, the technical side of it, right? It was so different. And like, we had to make our program better. And a guy named Mike Gotti, who's now lead carbon technician and does the body fits and all the repairs at Sam Schmidt's IndyCar team. He ran the team. He owned it. It was OMG, Audi Motorsports Group, man. Where, you know, we had factory support from Margay chassis in St. Louis and Lakitus engines over in Illinois. And I remember we had to deal with like Impact Racing at the time with Bill Simpson. And we were the first team in the Midwest to have like full custom kitted karting suits, man. Like we looked so good.
Meanwhile, I just had the orange cone special from Comet Kart Sales here in Greenfield.
As everybody had at one point.
Yes. Yeah. And it was not a fire suit. It was.
No. And that's a big thing.
Yeah.
No, it's a big thing. Like, I remember the one time Marco Andretti tried to
wearing
show up
a
Supernats.
Coat versus having.
Well, it's even the material, and it's a massive safety thing. And I'm not going to try and get too far on this, but I remember Marco and Pippa Mann showed up to run Supernats, largest go kart race in the world, in the parking lot at the Rio All Suites Hotel in Las Vegas. It's a SCUSA sanctioned event. And he's out there in his little like Minute Maid or Dr. Pepper suit. And I'm like, bro, you can't wear that. Yeah. I mean, this is me. It's my brand, you know? It's, dude. So what Nomex, right? Nomex has a fire retardant chemical makeup. And we wear the Nomex underwear, the Nomex suit, the suit's multiple layers. The threads are made of certain things. That is to protect you in a race car where there's a fuel tank that you are strapped into. In a cart with a K, we are strapped to nothing. And
the
so
seat is what is holding you.
Yeah, right. You're in the seat in your That's hands, it. Right? And the pressure on your inside knees on that fuel tank.
Yes.
And honestly, if you get launched with an Nomex suit, it becomes like grip tape on the asphalt. And dude, you would like, I'd rather have Levi's on. And that's what it was. So a lot of in the early karting days, it was Levi jeans and a karting jacket, which is actually made out of kind of like a, it starts with an N also, but it's a super high gloss material, and it was built for abrasion as resistance. So when you would get launched out, you would just slide. Yeah. Like kind of like leathers on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what, if you go down to Newcastle now and you rent a go-kart, that's what they put on you.
Yeah. They throw you the Azusa safety jacket and say,
good luck. Yeah. Have fun. Get run over by the 9-year-old.
I'll say this though. Marco at Newcastle started a grass fire one time with his cart.
I was in that race.
Yeah. And that was the one where he was cheating most of the race. He was cutting a turn.
They're like,
he just set a track record by 12 seconds.
Yeah, it was in the Dan Weldon Memorial Pro-Am.
Yeah, he flipped his cart and started a small fire. He stomped it out, though, but yeah.
I'll never forget.
So back in the day when you come to Newcastle, you would come just up and down the State Road 3 corridor. You didn't have the appreciation for this fine town that you do tonight.
No, wicked cool, though. I'll be back.
Yeah, all right. We got a chair for you at any time. So after you graduated from karting yourself.
Yeah.
You got into this driver management thing.
Well, there's a big section in the middle.
And a few in between.
I think the biggest point was right there. It was before all of that. I mean, I stopped racing and I realized, man, like instead of spending money and hoping to put enough back together to make it back to the track the next week, the offset, the medical bills, right? The concussions. I'm at 22 concussions and 2 brain bleeds right now as we sit here. Majority of them from street racing karting. Because, like, I'm not lying to you. The way it wasn't me and other people would say I was out of control or whatever, we were really fast.
I never got injured, but I was in the kids' class.
But, well, yeah, see, but you started. You tried.
I did try.
And our thing was like, man, we were fast. And we were going to run up front and stay up front, and we weren't going to finish. And that was my attitude. And it was, you know, young and stupid. And
2 or 3 people with the same attitude, you end up hurt a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I got out of the cart, did some legend car stuff, did a few other things, some roadster things, had some ideas. But honestly, I didn't have any money. My parents have a business in motorsports. The last thing they want to do is go to a racetrack when they're not on the road racing. So I started working on carts. And then I started to realize, and it was Jay Howard was the first one. What had happened was, is my parents owned a graphics company that did all the graphics for the likes of Chip Ganassi Racing, Sam Schmidt Motorsports. Back then, Schmidt had just a lights team. And an amazing, amazing, amazing human who's no longer with us, Chris Griffiths, ran that program. And he was over at my parents. My parents ran this company for over 30 years, and they never had a facility. The basement of my house growing up in west side of Indianapolis was Performance Graphics HQ.
They were just printing, the plotters or whatever.
Plotters, printers, laminators, they had it all. I mean, my mom, my parents for 22 years, they were on 22 or 26 years, were on site at every single IndyCar and IRL.
Just printing out Target
Champ
logos.
Car. And they did it for 80% of the field. And they were the only company, to my knowledge, still to date, that's actually taking the equipment on the road. Right? So it was set up there. They were committed to it. And back then, we weren't wrapping cars. Right? Back then, you know, you were going to a city and you were signing a local insurance agent to jump on your car for $20,000 or whatever. And so go see Ellen. She'll make you your stickers at the track. And Chris Griffiths, my dad was spotting at the time. He had quit fueling. He was spotting in the IRL. My dad was a CGR for a long time. He won an 8500 there with Montoya, won an 8500 there with Dixon. And he was spotting, and Chris Griffiths goes, "Hey, Christopher, I need a spotter tomorrow for this Indy Lights test at the Speedway. Your dad does it, and you want to do it?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll give it a shot." And I did it. It was with Jay Howard, this new, arrogant, cocky kid that looked like Rod Stewart.
Jay wasn't in IndyCar yet himself.
It was Indy Lights. And so,
which is the AAA for those that are uninitiated.
Yep, one step down. And so we did this test at the Speedway, and Chris goes, "Hey, man, good job. You know, we'd like to have you do the race too, the Freedom 100. Let's go. Can't wait." Maybe two days later,
those cars are going to be 7 wide. Good luck.
Yeah. And like not too long later, like once I'm within days, Chris Griffiths calls me and goes, "Hey, come to the shop." "Oh, yes, sir." I'm 18 years old. Is this 2000? And I'm going to tell you, because I have a list and it came up today at work.
The Rod Stewart.
2006. Graduated high school, Ben Davis High School, 2005. So 1 year later in May, I'm back at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
One of the hottest Indy 500s on record, by the way. 06.
Yeah. And so I'm there.
This is the Sam Hornish, Marco Andretti race.
Yeah. I about jumped off the roof. I thought my career was going to be done, and so was my life in that moment. Because I was like, there's no way this is okay. But he then tells me, "Hey, I want to talk about the Indy 500. "Oh, what about it?" Because I had ran tires. My first Indy 500 I worked was 2003, running tires for AJ Foyt Racing. I did it in 03, 04, 05 for Anthony, Larry, and Larry, with finishes of 18th, 32nd, and 33rd. Thank you, Larry, who's now one of my closest, dearest friends. And he goes, "Well, we're gonna run Ayrton Dare in a Sam Schmidt Motorsports random one-off for the Indy 500. You did a good job at the test. You're gonna do the lights card. Do you want a spot for the race?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Well, I know in lights I'm paying you $100 a day. For that car, I'll pay you $200 a day." And I'm
double
like,
your pay.
I'm like, "Bro, dude, a chili cheese burrito at Taco Bell was 70 cents back then, man. Like, that was great." And so, sure enough, I did it. And that was my first IndyCar race I ever spotted, was the 2006 Indy 500. And we finished it. Two laps down, mind you.
They put you in turn one or turn three.
Turn one.
The turn one spotter.
I have never in my life.
Who the hell did they find to spot turn three?
Trevor Minchner, who's still with Delcoin all these years later.
Was it Trevor's first race as well?
I have no idea, man. It's been so long ago.
So level of panic, lap one.
Pro.
Turn one.
Pro. Oh, my God.
Because they crashed.
Well, but to be fair.
PJ Chesson crashed in that.
But to be fair.
Yes, I remember this, guys.
I did the Freedom 100, though, on carb day.
2 days
ago. With Jay Howard.
How many cars were in the Indy Lights race that year?
I don't know, because I only saw two.
Two.
And in all honesty, Wade Cunningham was driving for Brian Stewart, Canadian legend, Jay for Sam Schmidt. My dad, remember, he's the, I'm the guy. Scott Dixon's spotter. We're winning races. He was with them from, well, that'd have been 06 to 09. Whenever Ganassi came, when Dixon came over to the IRL, whatever they called it at that point, till through the end of 2009, my dad was with them. They won a championship in Indy 500 and 19 races together. But he's got all this confidence. He's got Wade Cunningham. "Well, I got this kid, Jay Howard. Again, looks like Rod Stewart." We ran 1-2 the whole race. We're leaning on each other. And in that moment, it was in that race that I learned a very valuable lesson about competition in motorsports and spotting, especially. It does not matter who the person next to you is. It does not matter if they're your father. You treat them like they are the biggest competition in your life. Because
your car is what matters.
Because I looked over, and at one point, my dad, I mean, bless his heart, he's not a mechanic. He's not an engineer, not a race car driver. He raced off-road cars. And he ran the Baja 1000 several times. But he's an inside-outside clear guy, right? That's what he says. Inside-outside clear, got to run, go get him. And spotting has evolved a lot since then, but that's kind of where he's at still, and he's still doing it. But I leaned over, I'm like, man, that thing keep jumping out of gear, exit of one? And, hey, guys, I think this thing's jumping out of gear, exit of one. I'm like, you dirty dog. He beat us by about 3 feet to the line. Oh, I was devastated. Ran second. Started my spotting career running second at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But yeah, dude, turn one of that thing. And I think that's when Chesson had the Carmelo car with Hemelgarn.
Yeah.
Dude, and that thing was a gem.
His G-Force.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they did not make it out of turn two. I was sitting in the infield of turn two that weekend.
I think they crashed center exit.
They were, it was teammates. It was PJ and somebody else, whoever his teammate were. They crashed.
I'll tell you who his teammate was. It was a young American. His dad drove for a Honda and won a Formula One. It was Jeff Bucknum.
Yeah. Yeah. It was either him or Phil Giebler. I remember.
Now, Giebler never ran the Hemelgarn. He ran the Playa Del.
There you go. Yeah.
Rookie of the year.
It's the other Panos.
So that's when it started on the spotter stand, man. And all these years later, I finally got a Freedom 100 win way later on.
Those are tougher to get now.
with Mateus Laced. We won there with Carlin. I was so pumped that year. It was 2017. And then the best finish at the 500, albeit I've done about everything I could, and the people I've been with have done everything they could, is second in 2022 with the Pato Award.
Close. Very close.
No, it still burns, but
it burned us all.
But hey, you know what the cool part is? That day for Chip Ganassi Racing helped pave the way, and that's where I'm at now. And like, man, it's good, right? Like, you can't complain about that coming off this year. But so then we get to COVID, man. Like, I'm struggling with my concussions for a long time. I think we've talked about this before. And 2019, I didn't spot at all. I'm still at Bell Helmets, and I'm trying to get my brain right, you know, and just trying to really.
So you've had enough concussions to be a subject matter expert for Bell Helmets to put you to work.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I ended up running everything for motorsports in North, South, Central America, New Zealand for Bell. Started in 16, took it over as me, right? And Kyle Kitzman, the CEO. And he slowly let me build my group. And then I moved, opened a facility in Speedway, Indiana. Then we opened one in Charlotte and, you know, some of the last projects I did. But I took that whole year off from spotting. I didn't want to do it. I was having too much anxiety, stuff like that. I mean, you know, you can only see so many of your friends get killed in a race car. You can only be involved in so much stuff. You know, losing Dan Weldon was really tough. Great human being, close friend. Losing Justin Wilson, very tough. Very close friend. And then 17... with Sebastian Bourdais at Indianapolis really, really hit me hard.
This is his qualifying crash?
Yeah. I mean, Sebastian was in my wedding in 2016. I mean, we are so close. And that one, like, just put me back. And I got through 18, but I knew something was wrong. And so my ex-wife, Rachel, amazing human being. She was like, hey, you got to do something. Funny, I don't even remember the sequence. It was me, it was Marshall Pruitt, it was whoever wrote the forward, Ryan McGee from ESPN, and Dale Jr. in a group text. And Dale's like, why didn't you call? And Marshall's like, hey guys, I'm just trying to connect here. And Ryan's like, yeah, what do you guys need, type thing. And then once Dale put the pieces together, he's like, really, like, why are these other people getting involved? Why didn't you call me? I could have gotten you to Pittsburgh. And I'm like, bro, like, honestly, it wasn't until the one moment when I'm speaking on the phone with Marshall Pruitt. I'm inside the United Center, whatever they call it, America's Center in St. Louis, where the Rams used to play.
Yeah.
Reggie Bush won his $36 million.
The TWA Dome.
Yeah. For the Dirt in December, Dirt Late Model Midget and Modified Indoor Dirt Race, which is actually happening this weekend. I was sitting in there and I was bad. You go through stuff, and for those of you that don't know anything about it, and that stuff has to come out of you somehow, right? Just like if you have an infection or something, like, it's got to come out of you. But it's not physical. So it's hand tremors. It's stuttering. It's absolute pure insomnia. It's mood swings. It's anger outrages. It's, I went to a grocery store one time in 3 years. Didn't know this until reflecting on it with the doctor. But Dale Jr. gets me dialed in. I go to Pittsburgh. Rachel and I go out there, see a doctor, and we start a plan. So 2019, I'm just going to be Seb's guy. And at this point, like, I've been helping Seb a lot, Bourdais on deals and getting stuff lined up, getting stuff ready. And then honestly, it wasn't really, well, end of 2019, I leave Bell. And I get a text message from Kevin Swindell from Swindell Speed Lab. He's like, "Hey man, I don't know if this works or not, but let's just give it a try." And I'm like, "I ain't got nothing else to do." Right. And we get to about November, the aero screen's coming out. The rules to test an aero screen, though, if you're a current IndyCar team, is you have to have a veteran driver. You're allowed one veteran driver to test this thing, right? So it's easy for some of these teams to pick, right? Penske's going to use Newgarden. Ganassi's going to use Dixon, however it lines up. Well, Dale Coyne has young Santino Ferrucci and Sebastian Bourdais. And Dale Coyne, at the end of the season, we had gone to Dale for the second straight year saying, "Hey man, look, we've got four offers on the table and they're great." And Dale's like, "No, you're my guy." "Okay. I mean, Dale, you have the contract. We're just seeing if we can get out of here. You got to ask." And so we asked, you said no. So we go down to Sebring. I fly down there for the Bell stuff. We're trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to do? I mean, dude, nobody had a clue, right? Like, we're going to have this one scoop, and here's a NASCAR air channel. Like, I've got totes.
You're trying to figure out how to ventilate it.
How am I going
to
do this, right? Like, and so, like, I've got totes of stuff on team trucks, and, I mean, I'm spending an absurd amount of money on Bell Helmets credit card, on CPAP hosing, and 3D printer people to make me adapters and different things, and, you know, this kid to draw the thoughts of my brain into CAD for me, and we're down there, and everybody's in a great mood, and I leave, and then Seb calls me the next day. He's like, "Hey, Dale fired me last night after you left." And I'm like, "So what?"
He was down there testing, and then they found another opportunity.
Yeah.
And another driver to jump in the
car. So basically, it's like
they put Malukas in the car?
No, they put a young man named Alex Pillow.
There you go.
And so not my happiest time of my life. And so I was shook. I was angry.
This is going into 2020.
Yeah, this is like late November, yeah. Right? And you're just kind of like, I am over the top upset. And I called Seb, and he's French. Like, I love the guy to death, but he has some of that, it's okay.
Doesn't have the American rage and anger.
Yeah, it's just different, right? And it's not that it's wrong. It's just different than what we're used to. And look, I I've told him this to his face. Like, he can be a bit mopey. Like, when he's down, he's down. But also, to be as good as he is when he's on at what he does for a profession, it's understandable. And I said, "Dude, I'm not giving up on this." And he's like, "Hey, if you want to be the guy that keeps my career alive and be the guy to make all this happen, you've been doing it anyway. Just do it." So Swindell Speed Lab, we're at Las Vegas for the Supernats with Rio, doing merch and content. And man, I don't know how I did it, but for 14 days, I kept this thing a secret. I talked to every team owner in the paddock for 14 days and nobody told the media. I got Marshall, one of my closest buddies, calling me asking, "Hey, what's going on here? Hey, what's that?" I'm like, "Yep, good. Everything's great." I'm like, "Feel bad not telling you, bro, but I can't afford to tell you."
Yep.
And every team owner I talked to, Chris, a month ago, Chris, 6 weeks ago, Chris, 3 weeks ago, "I could have done this. We would have loved the opportunity for Sebastian Bourdais to be in our race car, but I'm full." One guy didn't have that answer. The name? Larry Foyt.
14 car.
And Larry's like, "Oh, well, let's talk about it." And again, I've known Larry since he was racing USF cars. And I said, "Well, I'll be in Vegas." He goes, "Well, I'm in Vegas." I said, "Where are you at?" He goes, "I'm at the MGM." I said, "Well, I'm at the Rio." He goes, "Huh." And I said, "I'm not letting you out of it." 12:30, MGM, next to the sports book. So there's the mechanical horse racing. So it's a digital horse sports book. But you remember Bubble Ball? It's like a Bubble Ball thing, but it's the little, and
we're just watching the metal horses go around.
You're just watching the metal horses go around, but the race is on the TV, right?
Okay.
And I said, he goes, "How do you know that where that's at?" I'm like, don't ask dumb questions here, Foyt. Okay. Just, you know where it's at. There's a bar right next to it. Super dark, low lit. velvet curtains. I'll be there 12:30. He's like, all right.
Tall adults at the table next to you.
Yeah. So we get in there, man, and we leave with a six race deal. And subs and it leaves with a six race deal because that morning he's still Dalton Kellett. So we'd managed Kellett didn't really kind of had a budget. He had most of the budget.
Kellett had done a full year the year before, but they weren't sure what was going to happen the next year.
Yeah. And it was just one of those things where not everything I got to move, man. My lower back, my butt is numb.
Go anywhere you need to go.
And so basically what had happened was, is, you know, and this was an opportunity for AJ Foyt Racing, right? To really
put a champion in the car.
Yeah. Well, let's really evaluate
in
this.
In a developer. Like, for people that don't know, Sebastian Bourdais was did four straight championships in kart.
Four straight in kart.
For Newman Haas.
Then he went to Formula One for Toro Rosso.
Yeah. And then
blew up 17 of 21 motors.
Yeah.
One in a Dale Coyne car, which only Justin Wilson
but
had
went,
done.
But then, yeah. But then went to the Peugeot factory.
Yeah, he was a factory WEC driver.
Program.
So he's like... The Sebastian is a legend,
dude,
and he's a person that he's an interesting personality, but yeah. He had ever since the like reunification, the collapse of CART, had kind of struggled to
never
get
a ride
deserving of his talents.
Yeah.
In IndyCar, he never really had gotten it,
and that was the disappointing part for how that went down in 19 was those deserving rides. Like we had found ourselves in a position in a market where experience outweighed youth and budget, right? Like there were some teams with funded programs, championship caliber programs calling.
Yeah. You could get hired, but the timing didn't work.
But the timing just didn't work. And it was like, man, it's unfortunate.
At this point, 4 years in rearview mirror, can you tell us what cars might have been available?
No.
Still a secret.
Still can't. But they were good. And but you look at it now and you go back to that time, I guess, and earlier that morning, Seb's like, yeah, I don't have a lot of faith in that. Da, 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 da. He's still kind of moping around in St. Pete, just kind of figured it out. Like, at the end of the day, like, Sebastian Bourdais didn't need to go to work. He's done fine. He's going to be okay. Great wife, two amazing kids, just keep getting older every day. You know, his daughter's off at Ballet Academy in Asheville, I think. And his son, Alex, is doing great in like theater stuff down Tampa St. Pete and also video production schooling, like as a 12-year-old, right? Like the kid's killing it. He wrote a song about a girlfriend, about heartbreak. I'm like, bro, like, okay, you're K. Jonas Brothers. And but I mean, he didn't need to go racing. The problem with guys like Sebastian Bourdais is the only thing they've ever wanted to do is go racing. Right? That's their biggest fault. And so he wanted to keep going, but Mustang Sampling had left, okay, Action Express with the new incoming DPI sports car in IMSA.
These are not IndyCar teams.
IMSA sports
program.
So we are transitioning the top level of IMSA racing to a new chassis, a new class called DPI. And
which is basically a universal chassis between the US and Europe.
Not yet. That's our current one.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the one before
they're trying to move that way though.
Yeah, it's where we're headed or what we're doing. And basically Action Express Racing had gone from two cars to one car, and Seb had always had like the endurance rounds, the 24, those types of things with Action Express in the Mustang Sampling car. Well, Mustang Sampling and Christian Fittipaldi was kind of the liaison on it, took that to John Church Motorsports out of Minnesota and JDC. They called Seb. You're not doing anything. Yeah. Would you come drive our car full time at IMSA? And he's like, I want to. I love JDC. They're great people. Do you ever get back? Right? Here's the question.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're 20, 30, but especially when you're 40.
Yeah.
Do you come back?
And this is what Elio Castroneves dealt with. This is what
exactly
Ryan Briscoe went over to drive a sports car for.
And let's talk about that, right? Like Ryan Briscoe, one of the most talented people to ever drive a race car. Like truly, does he have the results in the championships? No. But when it came to raw talent, the guy was incredible. Elio Castroneves, right? Four-time Indian.
Don't even. Just please continue.
Multi-time Indianapolis 500 champion.
Because the other winner would be even worse. So I don't want to.
Man, no. love the guy. No. I love the quirkiness of sports on that. But it's one of those things where like, do I come back? And he's like, man, I'm going to take it. I have to take it. Take it. So he takes it. So 7 hours later, I managed to piece together a six-race schedule that doesn't conflict with it. So we get down to St. Pete. And the world stops.
Oh. Now we have to redo the entire calendar again.
Bro. And ended up with only one race.
He basically did the Grand Prix, right?
No.
Or
I did, yeah. Sorry, it was like two or three. It was the last three races.
Yeah.
And it was all because of Leader Circle, right?
Because like, they needed to get that they car needed to get in the car to in. Money.
And so I'll never forget though, St. Pete. He had to beat Marco. Like that's what it came down to. Marco versus Bourdais, Andretti versus Foyt. Tied in the points, whoever beats who. And to be fair, to give Marco Andretti credit, dude was running like eight, digging. The best street race performance he's had in a very long time. And Sato got him over in like 5-6 and just
what I'm hearing is that you are responsible for ending Marco Andretti's IndyCar career.
No.
You got Sebastian on the grid, and then he beat Marco, and then Marco never went full-time again.
You know?
After you got him knocked out of the
park. I will accept all the thank yous and blessings. Without that, would we have Marco Andretti, the SRX champion?
No.
See?
No.
You changed his life.
See? Got his first championship you've and race win in 14 years. I think years.
You probably, if we follow this logic, you're the reason why Gainbridge is now in NASCAR.
I really don't want to take credit for that either.
And and Andretti Global has moved to NASCAR and has got their little portion of Spire.
So
all because Chris Wheeler wouldn't let it go in Vegas.
Yeah. But that year, we were able to lock in at Road America. Larry Foyt and I got together. One of the coolest stories of my life. At this point, I'm playing a lot of Call of Duty with a lot of my friends. Oliver Askew's. Oliver Askew, Kyle Kirkwood were on my couch in spare bedroom for over 10 years anytime they were in Indiana until they both made it to IndyCar. Even during the COVID thing, Oliver Askew has a job. He has an apartment in Carmel. I have a garage. He doesn't. So what does he do? He goes to his trainers at St. Vincent's, whoever they were. They loaded up a U-Haul full of gym equipment, and he shows up at my house. Hey, bro, didn't think you'd mind, but I need a gym. For COVID. Every day the kid's in there at my garage at 8 a.m. just turning up the tunes. And so
what did the neighbors think?
Oh well, we just moved in. Oh, this is great.
You've just got these young
young
men showing up in your garage.
We just moved in like 2 weeks. Like, okay, we closed 2 weeks before the world stopped, pretty much. I can't got everything moved. And like that May, the world's still closed. I had David Hunt and the Mac Daddies in my backyard, and I had 75 people in my yard. And it's like, you want to wear a mask? Wear a mask. You don't want to wear a mask? Don't wear a mask. I don't care. There's 450 cold beers sitting in this horse trough over here. There's a bartender. I was flat topping and smoking salmon. I mean, we had the I don't care. I need you guys all in my life party.
Yeah.
And my neighbors, like half of them were there drinking beers and half of them were like reporting us to local authorities. As we're getting through all this, you know, playing a lot of Call of Duty. Alexander Kariba has already kind of entered the picture at that point. He really still wasn't racing anything full time. Zach Veach and I's relationship picked up. Oliver's always been, I mean, his birthday was the other day. I tweeted happy birthday to my firstborn. Because, you know, he will always be that kid to me. And then it just kind of formulated, right? The Swindell thing just didn't work. And it wasn't for any reason other than, you know, for Kevin. You know, Kevin was paralyzed in a sprint car, Knoxville Nationals years ago. For his rehab and for his health betterness, he needed to be in Charlotte. And for business, he needed to be in Charlotte. And I refused to go to Charlotte at the end of the day. I'm not going to do it.
You're 317 based.
Bro, I could have done it when I was
maybe 765 adjacent.
Yeah, maybe. Carry the four, divide by nine, we'll figure it out. But literally, like, I'm just like, I had those opportunities when I was younger to really go embrace that world down there. And at this point in my career, I don't want to restart there. But also, I'm thinking, wow, if I just would have known this pandemic was coming, I wouldn't have quit that really good job I had at Bell. So hanging out, a lot of Call of Duty again, and it spreads into the summer. And next thing I know, you know, word about what I did for Sebastian. Once we announced Sebastian full time, like, oh, how'd that happen? Oh, Wheeler did that. Oh. Maybe I need to call Wheeler. Right. Then Veach's relationship with Andretti starts to come apart at the end. And I get the phone call. Hey, can you help? Oliver Askew decides to go a different direction once he's released from McLaren from the company he was with. He goes, hey, bro, I need you. And the calls just kept coming. And I'm like, I guess I'm doing this. So I called Jason Folk.
Do you know how the business model of that's supposed to work? Because that's the part where I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I was very lucky to be able to figure it out with Sebastian, right? Like, it was a pretty clean slate. But it's all, just like everything else, not just in life, but especially in motorsports, man. It's all about people, right? The first thing I did at any point, well, Sebastian, it's a bit different, right? Sebastian has great representation on the legal side already. And he has a whole career of like well, here's the contract I had with this. Here's this. Let's look through the, and it was all good. His legal counsel, everybody was really great there. But for a lot of stuff, I called Jason Folk, who was with a big firm downtown, 20 plus years of motorsport litigation, contract litigation. We knew each other because he did a lot of work for Charlie Kimball. And I said, Jason, here's kind of what's naturally happening here. You know, I already had the consulting company because I'd go put $500,000 on this program because I knew the guy, and, you know, I'd make my commissions. And I was already doing a lot of this commission business development type stuff. But the driver thing was different. And so it just took off, man. And, you know, we had Veach and we had Askew and we had Kreeb and we had Bourdais, and we're doing all these things. And, you know, it came down to it, and Chip Ganassi Racing called for Sebastian, and, you know, Chip, I'm pretty confident Chip just called Seb and said, hey, we're doing this. It was him or Mike Hole. And that's one of those things where it's like, I'm not getting in the middle of this, right? Like, you know, by the people in the paddock and the deal you're doing, that what they're going to put in front of you is going to be right. It's going to be legit, and it's going to be fair. It's not everybody does that. But when they say Roger Pinsey's calling, Chip Ganassi's calling, you say, okay, right? Thank you, may I have another?
It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And he was calling for the IMSA program, the Cadillac.
He was calling for the Cadillac program. And so Seb came to me, and he's like, hey, man, you know, I know Foyt has an option, and there's all these possible things. What do you think? And I was like, Seb, here's what I care about. I care about two things. I care about, one, not screwing anybody over, and two, you being happy. Everything we've done and everything I've done to this point in this world has been above the table. So far above the table, we probably lost more than we won because I was too honest for an industry and that side of it that isn't always full of honest people. And so with Foyt, and Foyt's like, hey, I'd love to have you back. But honestly, man, I don't know if we're going to have the budget. Kirkwood's coming up. We might have a shot at him. And Seb's like, look, bro, take him. I'm going to do this. And it's been great. Sebastian loves it, right? Sebastian loves that program. We got to go to, I mean, I was at Le Mans with him this calendar year on the CGR side. And so while all this is going on, I'm still spotting. I come back to spotting in 2020 because of Will Power. His spotter stuck over, as all this is developing, this new business, his spotter stuck in Europe racing for most of the summer. So there's a 7-race stretch, and Will calls me and goes, bro, I need your help. What do you need? We knew each other a lot from early days, but I was doing a lot with him in karting at the time, even with Billy Vincent and Will Power kart. And I said, yeah, what do you need, man? And he goes, I need a spotter. I'm like, oh, dude. I said, that's behind me. And he goes, mate, yeah, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm sure it's behind me. Like, I haven't been this mentally, like, healthy and happy in a long time.
Is this like going into Texas?
This would have been going into Road America, would have been the first race.
Okay.
So it was like, it was doubleheader Road America, doubleheader Gateway, doubleheader Iowa, Indy 500.
Because there was like a Texas one where everybody flew in for the day.
Yeah, so I didn't even go. Yep. I wasn't even there. I watched it from Pittsburgh on the couch.
Yep.
But it was doubleheader at Iowa, doubleheader Gateway, doubleheader Road America, and the Indy 500. Those are my 7 races I had. And so...
So you're telling me you've spotted for Penske?
Bro, you don't want
to know. Ganassi, McLaren... And Hemelgarn.
Never spotted for Hemelgarn directly.
No, it wasn't Hemelgarn. Oh, Foyt. It was Foyt. I'm sorry.
Foyt.
In the 06 Indianapolis 500.
That was Schmidt.
That was a
Schmidt. If you look at the current teams.
Have you spotted at Junkos?
Well, it depends on how you phrase it.
Carlin, Junkos.
I mean, I was the first guy Carlin, Jeff Fickling hired Carlin for the Oval development and teaching of their drivers for the lights. So I check Carlin off the list.
Yeah.
And carry over Junkos. Worked with Foyt early on as a tire carrier, but I also spotted for Sebastian that race in St. Pete in 2019, even though I wasn't spotting more. It's St. Pete. Like I said, like seven words. It's fine. Ganassi,
CFH, Hartman,
Penske,
Carpenter,
no Ed Carpenter Racing.
Not yet.
No Ed Carpenter Racing. Ray Hall, I did a Ray Hall race, the Indy 500 one year with Michelle Jourdain Jr.
Oh, yeah.
When we caught on fire like four different times throughout the month, and that fourth car hand-me-down pro, it was, oh my goodness. But Michelle Jourdain Jr., I've known since I was 6 years old. Like, he was so pumped, and Tom Anderson, who's a legend, was running the program. And Tom Anderson's one of those people that, like, you know, when you grow up around it and he's the guy, you have so much respect for him. And Tom Anderson calls you, and he only calls you once. I was sitting out the year because we had lost Dan. We had lost Dan, and I sat it out. And my dad worked for Dan when Dan was killed, and so he won Indy 500 with him that year. And I had no interest in being there. I had no interest in doing it. And my dad likes to tell the story differently, where like he's pretty much like, "Hey, my old man needs a job," because he didn't have anything going on. And so he went to this. I hate this. He went to Coin, replaced me where I quit with Justin Wilson, and they go win Texas. Like, what? How many years I've worked my butt off running 19th with Dale Coin?
And on these, is it Ray on Hall, Oval? Is it side by side with Ray Hall for the win, I think?
Yeah. Well, Ray Hall touched the wall with like two to go or something.
Yeah.
And like all these years, and Packy shows up his first Oval, parks it in victory lane. I'm like, come on, man.
Clear.
And it actually comes down to, it was years later, it was with KVSH at the Milwaukee Mile, July 12th, 2015, that I got my first Oval win in IndyCar as a spotter. 2006 Indy 500 to the 2015 Milwaukee Mile is how long it took me to go to victory lane on an Oval.
Did you guys win that by like a lap?
At one point, yeah, we lapped the field.
Yeah.
But so Power calls, I'm like, dude, I'll do it. Whatever. Boy, oh boy, we were good too. We dominated five of the seven races, and just we had zero luck once you were on pit lane. Whether it was just a silly, easily small mistake on a strategy, or a fumbled inside front on a stop that mattered, like we didn't win a single one. But I felt good, and we went back and forth. Am I going to go there in 2021? Is his other guy who he's had since 08 going to be with him back full time? And at the end of the day, you know, I told Will, look, you just need to stick with your guy. I don't like complicated things.
Yep. And then and a papaya opportunity came along.
Well, and that's a weird one, right? So Taylor Kyle, I don't hide it. We've been best friends since we were 6 years old. Done everything together. But we never worked together until 2021. And he called me and he goes, "Hey, I heard you're not doing the Penske thing." I'm like, "No, I'm not." He goes, "What are you going to do?" I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. You've been talking to Rachel?" You know, at this point, I was still married. And I'm like, "Why you guys sound the same right now?" And he's like, "Why don't you come over for lunch?" I'm like, I don't want to come over for lunch. I don't even want to have this conversation. And he's like, "Trust me, you need to come over for lunch." So I came over from lunch, and he just takes this piece of paper right here, pulls it out from under his desk and goes, I'm like, "What's that?" He goes, "Just read it." I turned it over and I'm like, "Oh, really? That's what I'll think about it." And he's like, "That's the most lucrative spotter, driver, assistant, helmet, technician contract IndyCar has ever seen." I'm like, "Yeah, but it's still not perfect." He goes, "What do you want?" I'm like, "Oh, God." And so we did. We worked through it. It was super fair with each other.
You didn't want to share hotel rooms, did you?
To be fair, I didn't care there because our buddy Cole was there, right? So I was like, "I will do the shared hotel room if I get to pick my roommate of anybody in the building." He's like, "As long as they're male, yes." I was like, "Oh, well." And so that's what we did, and kicked it off. And as I did, I looked after the helmets. I looked after Pato personally. I looked after Felix personally. Like, two great kids, two great human beings.
Did you have to get the ice for the ice bath?
No, nope, not my problem. But on road and street courses, I spotted for both of them. So I would spot for the five and the seven both at the same time.
Just flipping channels on your radio?
No, what the hell are you doing? I had the ugliest setup. I was running like five radios. So I had two handheld boxes. There's a five car, seven car here for the actual car conversation. And then strategist for each car. And then a fifth radio coming up as a scanner, which was race control. And they knew the rules. If they were anywhere close to each other, the one in front of the other got priority, period.
You're like a walking Radio Shack.
So this doesn't cause an existential crisis for you if your boys are, you know, wheel to wheel.
Nah, I mean, we did learn
at Canada Corner.
We learned it in Nashville that year we had to use it for the first time, where if I hold both car push and talks at the same time, I can just say it once. Cause at one point I'm like, green, 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 yellow, yellow, runoff, like, and I'm juggling the stuff, and then we tested it, and sure, like, it always sounds good under the tent when you're testing it or in the shop, but what about when the action's on the racetrack?
Yeah.
And Yeah, it worked. And so that was the plan. And then I think, you know, going into 22, they made some changes and they wanted to shift some things up. And they said, hey, dude, we're going to move you full time to paddles car only. I'm like, well, whatever you want to do. Right. I think I'd gone back and I'm like, hey, dude, if you want me to spot for two cars at once, bro, you need to pay me at least like time and a half. Like this, there was some. That
you're by the way, we're going to add a third car and you got that one too.
Yeah. I'm like, cool. Let me see. Take you one of those, the guys that can like move a mouse and work a computer with their feet. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Like, we're going to be on the keyboard. 7 as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was cool. It was a good year, but I was tired of being, I just don't want to be an IndyCar spotter. I'm just tired, man. Like, I'm tired of it. I'm not gonna lie. I'm 37, dude. I was 18 when I started this. My eyes are not the same eyes as they were in 2006. They're not. And I work with a great guy at, I'm gonna do a shameless plug here. Aries Sports Vision up in Carmel, Dr. Joe. I worked with him for about 4 years now. And he brought years back to me visually with all the visual training. He works with baseball players and hockey players, help them identify the puck, identify pitches, that type of stuff. So how your eye training and your reaction to and everything works and identifying things at high rates of speed and identifying changes at high rates of speed. The guy's great. But even somebody that good, you're only going to get it so much better than it is. When there's so much, when it's already gone so far. And so got a little harder, got a little more frustrating. And so Toronto actually went to Max, who's one of the team managers, and he handled spotters. And I said, Max, I'm sorry, man, but I'm going to get you through the end of the year. I will help you find the replacements. But I'm done. He goes, why? And I said, I'm tired of spotting. He goes, why else? And I'll be 100% honest on this one. I was not a fan of the culture and how it was changing at the race team. I wasn't happy with the politics
becoming more
Formula One
British.
Yeah. And it's not, look, business is business, man. But I just, when I went there, it was the really cool family vibe that Sam Schmidt built. You know, I was in that shop for years when I didn't even work there. Like the team party at the end of the year, I was at it every year. I was part of the team without having them paying me for years, and a lot of great friends over. That's where it all started for me in this career journey. But it's not even like we're going through some changes. Like, dude, it's like if we left here and we came back tomorrow and they had put German schmear on your brick and you're like, that ain't washing off, you know, like this is bad, bad, different. And so I just didn't want to be a part of it. And I honestly just felt like I'm trying to build this business of mine. Everything's above table. And this thing is like just a political circus. I'm out. I can't do it. And that was it. And then not too long later, Taylor calls me up and goes, hey, dude, I left. I'm like, what? You're the president of the company.
Where are we going?
Well, that was the thing. I left because when I left, I already had another job. It was not Chip Ganassi Racing. I had a program in place actually to go help my old buddy Larry Foyt. And at the end of the day, you know, Larry had a partner back out right towards the last little bit of it. And I'm never going to be mad at Larry ever for this, but he was like, hey, dude, like, I know we wanted to, you know, we're trying to build this program, but I can't, like, we can't afford this right now. Like, it's because it wasn't just me. It was like, I wanted to build a program. And like,
it's going to be your opportunity to actually
to do something,
to put something together.
And I'll just said, never be mad at him for that. And I'm sitting around there last year. Taylor's at Ganassi. He's the new guy, right? How does the new guy hire his best friend? Even when your stepdad is the boss and the boss, you know, the big boss is a guy who Taylor and I have known since we were six. Both of our families have a great, great history in that office. You still don't just get called to the Yankees because you know somebody, or right? You got to earn that stuff. And so he's like, hey, I do need a spotter position. We're going to run this fourth car with this Armstrong kid. And I was like, if you can get it approved, I'll do it, man. I had just gotten a divorce. I had nothing going on. You know, the business is, it's staying steady, but it's kind of like, you know, I'm losing. I don't have an in-house legal that's just sitting there. I'm also not flashy about it. I don't.
Have you thought about dressing like some sort of a New Jersey man?
No, but man, that stuff this week's been great. I'm pumped. I pumped for the guy's story. Like, a little self-absorbed a bit, but like, You know what?
It's you need cool to roll down him. To St. Pete looking like you just came
no,
out of Sopranos.
I'm a company man now, dude. I don't.
What would happen if you rolled in Daytona and stood next to Sebastian dressed like a gangster?
I'll be honest.
I think it was the first time Sebastian was back after the Ford program with Chip. I thought Chip was going to cut my hard card off me when he saw me standing next to Sebastian at the car. He was like, ain't no managers around here. Yes, sir. Right? Like, sorry, sir. But we did it. I showed up and great season. I truly fell back in love. Was I doing what I wanted? Not exactly, but I fell back in love with going racing again.
But it was a new environment, new team.
Yeah, and being with Chip Ganassi Racing, man, it's like you don't think about it. You know, people tell stories, and you're like, oh yeah, cool, trying to promote something. But I'll be honest with you, I've never seen a motorsports entity organization take care of the human beings that make it happen as well as Chip Ganassi Racing does. I mean, from every aspect you can imagine, right? The Human Performance Center is not just for the drivers or the guys that go over the wall or the girls that go over the wall. It is for any member of the Chip Ganassi Racing organization can be in there. There's trainers in there. There's chiropractors. There's sports physicians that are always in and out. We have a full-time trainer in this facility. Obviously, I've been using it. But like just that one thing, right? Like they're pushing you to be better. What do you need? And as long as if you need something and it's going to help you do a better job, be a better version of yourself by doing your job better, by being more efficient, by going faster. Let's get together. And if it's what we need, that's what we'll do. And so it's, man, the culture that Chip and Mike, you know, and obviously it starts with Chip, but the culture that that from his leadership all the way through Mike, I fell in love with it. Right. And again, we get to the end of the year and it's like, okay, what am I going to do? And I got to, luckily, you know, they said, hey, we're going to do this thing. We're going to go 5 cars next year with Kiffin Simpson. And Taylor says, you know, we talked about it and would you be interested in doing this? You know, so at the end of October, I joined him full time. And from the spotter stand to the strategist spot, which is, bro, so much pressure. I've had one day on the stand with the IndyCar. We ran Kiffin in a rookie test at IMS technically the Friday before I actually started working. Or maybe it was the Friday of my first week. I can't remember. And so it was good. Throughout the day, I got way more and more comfortable learning the tools. It's so different. Right? We were talking about something about turn 4.
You're not just pressing one button and looking at a car go by. You've got all of the data, all the telemetry, all the engineers.
Well, how many screens are in front of you?
One. One. But and look, these guys, I'm not going to go in and reinvent the wheel at Chip Ganassi Racing. They are the standard for a reason, right? So I'm just trying to absorb. And I've got it. There were such great people there for that first test that day at IMS. You know, you had Jules, who's Pelosi engineer, who's been there for over 30 years, was the engineer of the day. Seth was the performance guy. He's been there forever. He's like the lead performance engineer guy, or one of those guys. Sim engineer, sorry. Ken Brooks, who's Dixon's assistant, was right there next to me. And then I had Taylor, Kyle, and Mike Hole, and Blair Julian, all from the strategist role, explaining things to me throughout the day. This is what this is. Don't worry about that. You're never going to read that. You need to see this. Teaching me about the cadence and the flow. And it was like, okay.
And Taylor is good too, but Mike Hall is like a legend. Right. In strategy.
Yeah.
There's times that nobody can figure out what they're doing. And then they get to the last stop. And I'm like, dang it.
Yeah,
they beat us.
Yeah, ask Graham Rahal.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, a couple times like this year, I think happened.
We did it at the Summer Indy GP.
Yeah.
Just
nobody knew what was happening.
Dude, Gateway.
Yeah,
I was going to say. All of a sudden, everything comes out of Gateway, and it's like, Dixon's how is Dixon 37 seconds ahead of the field?
Yeah.
I mean,
I was going to say, a couple times this year, nobody knows.
There's got to be just a little password-protected folder that they just give you the access to.
I tell you what,
Here's the special sauce right here.
But he's also nice enough that a lot of times, if you check his Twitter, I don't know if he does it every time. I'm not on Twitter that much. But he'll be like, the morning of the race, he'll be like, hey, you know, the average pit stops at this and this. And he'll give you like a little rundown of what the strategy is for the day. And you're like, that's not even fair. You're like, you're not telling us everything. But yeah, he's like, a couple times this year, everybody's like, what's Dixon? And you're at the end of the day,
Do you know how many years I would get on the private channel from the spotter stand? Be like, this doesn't make sense, you guys. Why don't we just follow the 9?
Yeah.
Like, here's a sign for you. The 9 started 2 spots in front of us. He's now 6 spots in front of us. And he's going to continue to get to the sharp end of this field. He may not win the race, but he's going to be close. And now, so if we would just follow the nine, maybe we don't have the pace. Maybe we can't make the fuel mileage. But as long as we just do what they do, we're going to be in a better spot than what we are now.
It might be a little short due to a lack of Scott Dixon.
He's so good.
Doing the things. So good doing the things. I was going to say, you still have to have Scott Dixon doing the things that they have him do. But yeah.
So Kiffin Simpson, this is a brand new team, right? The eighth car, the car that you were a part of last year was the Jimmy Johnson car.
The 11, yes.
That
the 48 to 11. 48
became the 11. So that team has existed three or four seasons now.
Yep.
And now this is a fresh start. Brand new.
I saw it from nothing. I went out and looked at our timing stand today, and it is still being built. Like, I mean, and I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like, this is not. I sit up in the business office. The effort that the people on that shop floor, the coordination, how organized it is. We got back from Laguna, and I'm like, how in the world are they going to? Literally, it's not like you just. Yeah, we have spares, but we have spares to go run four cars. You can't just take your spares and make a fifth car out of it and not have your spares now, right?
Not for 17 races or whatever the hell it's
going to
be.
And so it's a lot. I mean, there's a lot going on in that place. And so, but it's done pretty, it's so organized, right? And again, it's just leadership and leadership and leadership all day long. And honestly, people that just show up and they go to work because they want to win and they want to be there. That's the key.
So that's the Kiffin Simpson program. That's your weekend job. During the week job, you said you're on the business
side. Yeah, it's...
I assume that you're responsible for finding more sponsors so they can add the six car next year.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to say that. I did not say that, world. No, so it's kind of... We're kind of learning a bit as we go on some of it, right? When we put it all together, it was technical business development, right? Which is a lot on the competition side. So you think about the technical aspect of going racing in general. Well, how much money are we spending on paint? Luckily, we have a great program with Sherwin-Williams. So we have a great program there. But if we didn't, then my job would have been to have gone to find a Sherwin-Williams and say, hey, we know you don't want to give us cash money to be here, but we have a need for you because we're spending a large amount of money on paint and paint products. Or it's sanding discs or
cutting tools, all of those products.
It's tools, it's nuts, it's bolts, it's brake cleaner, it's shop towels.
It's indirect materials
literally to get the race anything, and it could be new. It could be new equipment. It could be new technologies.
I can't tell you how many times I was spent pole day in the Ganassi suite because of a Kennametal relationship.
Yeah.
Over the years. And those guys would.
And those machines are still there today.
Yeah. They would, and that little K was on my ticket in with Ganassi for many years.
But that's the world, right? And so it's just, it's developing what do we need? You know, can I save us money? Can I make us more efficient? And can I do something to help the engineers make the race cars go faster? Those are my goals every day when I walk in that shop. I get in my office, but I also have, it's really been fun. I've had a great opportunity to work with the people that are already there on the actual business development side, which is more of the sponsorship, DHLs, PNC, the American Legion, Ridgeline Parkland, I guess. So the people that are actually doing those and managing those accounts. And it's been really cool because I'm not the college educated business person. I'm not. Everything I know, I've learned from this and my experiences. And we have a lot of really smart people that didn't come from racing. So it's really cool that we've had this really kind of like organic way of, meshing that together. But they're like, hey, why do we do this? Well, I'll explain to you why we do it. And explain it. And now that person who's in this very important part understands it better.
Yep. Now they have the real world.
Yeah. And I'm not saying they're not smart by any means. They are. It's so incredibly talented and intelligent people that understand equations and business models and revenue models, things that I literally have to Google half the time. Right. But they're getting to get a little insight on what I've gone through, which helps maybe give a little insight on how we could just be better. It's fun, man. I didn't expect it. I did have another situation sorted out. We were moving forward with it. It was going to be a November 1st start time. And, it would have been like, getting drafted to the Orioles and having a chance that if this works out, you could be their franchise player. or get called up to the New York Yankees. And when I called the Orioles and told them what was happening, they said, we no longer, if Chip Ganassi Racing just gave you a legit job offer, you no longer have one from us.
Yep.
Because that's what friends do. Yep. They said, you're getting called by the best of the best, and you've got to take this opportunity for yourself. And super heartfelt, super happy. But it's like, how do you not, in general, how do you not want to walk out, you know, follow those steps of Mickey Mantle, right? Like, this does not happen often. And it's really cool.
There's 15 IndyCar championships and how the hell many Indy 500s now?
Yeah,
it's a lot, man. It's nine and counting. I mean, it's an incredible.
Dude, Le Mans.
Since 96 until now.
Le Mans winner.
Le Mans. Sarah and I
24
went,
winner.
Sarah and I went to the Henry Ford Museum this summer.
How cool is that?
And I've known Ryan Van Klompberg for a very long time.
Dude, I see RVK every day. And, that makes sense. You guys both wear flannels every day.
Yeah. So he, we were dating girls across the hall from each other at Purdue University.
Wow.
Pre-Sarah. So that's how I met Ryan. We became buddies. We'd talk about race cars. And he was on that GT program. So I saw him race with that car, and they crashed it at Long Beach. But I was there and watched them have a very rough weekend. Yeah. And then in June, so that was April. In June, they went to Le Mans with that car with Ganassi. And then you go to the Henry Ford Museum 7 years later, and it's like, God, how old am I? I'm looking at the car that I watched race. And it was supposed to be sitting there with the 1963 winner, 66 winner. But it was in Le Mans for the 40. It was the 63 because it was over for the 40th anniversary or whatever the hell it is.
50. It was actually, but this last year was also the centenary.
Yeah. So they'd shipped that car over to France.
Yeah. So this year at Le Mans, it was the centenary. So it was the 100th anniversary of the first Le Mans 24.
Yeah.
Which is cool. This is a little statistic that like Michael Guerin and I talked about. We don't know the real number. Our guess in a working competitive capacity, our guess is there's maybe 25 to 30 people on this planet who competed in the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500 and the Le Mans 24. And that's pretty damn cool. So I told O'Gara.
In 100th of each.
The 100th running, not the 100th, the 100th anniversary race.
Yeah.
Not the 100th running of it, but the 100th anniversary, right?
So 2011/2023.
Yes. And so, but I think they're like 9 years out or something like that from their 100th running. And
war-torn country.
You know? I looked at O'Gara, Mike O'Gara, who's team manager of our IMSA and WEC programs, and I said, it's your job to make sure we're back here for the 100th running in some capacity, because there's only going to be about 10 of us at that point, right? Like, that's such a small group at that point for all four of those events. It has been incredible.
Somebody else needs to make sure Bourdais is there.
Not my job anymore, man.
Yeah,
agency's gone. It's done.
But he's like the most French thing we know.
Literally took the Molson to go to school. He's from Le Mans, France. And I'm sidetracked, but it's cool. Sebastian's a great guy. We're very, 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 very close friends. I'd help him bury the body if he needed it. We've never gone anywhere together, anywhere, where people have been like, oh my God, Sebastian Bourdais. Can I have a picture and autograph? Occasionally you'll get it, but it's not like an overwhelming thing. We go to dinner downtown Indianapolis. It's like, hey, Wheeler, how are you? Who's your friends? Bro, being at technical inspection down on the square in Le Mans and just hearing.
He's Paul McCartney.
Isn't he? My God. He's bigger than the Beatles, man.
Yeah.
He's bigger than anything the Beatles ever touched. And you know, we had an unfortunate incident there in qualifying. I had a failure there. And when the safety car said he's cool, they dropped him off at pit in. We're about just past halfway down to pit out. It's our garage. This place is packed for qualifying. I mean, it is packed. I understand now why people compare it to the Indianapolis 500, because it is the largest. We talked about soccer earlier. To me, it's like a World Cup of motorsports. I didn't see somebody in a Old Navy t-shirt. You were wearing a national flag or manufacturer, and they were actually waving the flags and the air horns. And I'm like, this is absolutely incredible.
Wouldn't it be exciting to have all those manufacturers at a race?
Yeah. And it's a 24-hour. I mean, dude.
But it's more than that, because the race doesn't start till like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and we're there at 7 a.m.
So there's people that like just camped out all over the place. Dude,
it's insanity.
It's a 4-day festival and it's a 30-day hour.
Yeah.
Or 30-hour day.
And so, so he starts walking back with his helmet in his hands, walking back to the garage. And it gave me vibes of Felipe Massa's final walk at Interlagos in Brazil, when his car didn't make it into pit lane, it stopped and he just hopped out and he made that walk. And that place came alive. And they saluted their countrymen, their hero, Felipe Massa. Like, I have chills and goosebumps right now. And I'm watching it on the monitors in the garage. And I mean, we're panicked. Like, oh my gosh, how bad is this car? Like, we're never going to get out of here. Can we fix it? Like, we don't know anything. And he comes walking back. And all you hear is a rumble and a roar. And there was not a single fan in the sold out for qualifying grandstands that was not on their feet and cheering and screaming, Sebastian! It was incredible, man. And so to be able to go there with him and like experience one of my closest friends in his world.
Really appreciate it.
Wicked cool, man.
Yeah.
So cool.
That's spectacular. So looking into 2024.
Yeah.
People get to, will there be Chris Wheeler hero cards?
No.
Some Ridgeline hero cards with you on the back?
No. In fact, I will tell you that this is probably my last public show that you'll see for a very long time with me involved.
Until Kevin Lee interviews you at the Rolex 24.
That's not my, look, if it's at work, it's one thing, but Chris Wheeler, the public facing personality that's funny and tries to be funny at least and tries to do whatever is slowly going away. And it's honestly, it's the fact that I'm taking on more responsibility than I've ever had.
Yep.
As a man, as an adult, as a businessman, in my career. And, you know, if I didn't trust you guys, right, and I didn't trust your show and what this was, I probably wouldn't have done it. But I wanted to make sure we got this in before. And I've got to focus on that, right? And I've been on a journey, man, like for over the last year. Yep. On this real big journey of like really learning more about me. I'm not trying to go like Aaron Rodgers level on you, but like I'm not going into a silencer for 4 days. Like, that freaked me out.
How quickly could you heal an Achilles, though?
Probably faster.
Yeah.
At least I would have played. I'm on this journey, right? And for a long time, man, like, you know, doing stuff like this and being on this public-facing thing and building my own brand when I had my own company and I had reasons, that was important. But now, like, I'm so in love with going to work every day. Like, I truly am. I've never been somebody that wants to wake up at 5:45, 6 a.m. in the morning. I hate the morning. I've never once since I've started showing up to the office and been like, oh, why am I here? Dude, I get there. I'm walking that door just before 7 a.m. and I'm like high-fiving people. They're like, third cup of coffee. I'm like, let's go. Let's go, Pam. Right? Like, let's get after it today. Let's have ourselves a day. We are Chip Ganassi here. Let's go. Yeah,
it's an exciting, fresh start.
It's so cool, man. And so, yeah, none of that. There'll be none of that. Still, if you're at the racetrack, come say hi.
So yeah, so we're heading into 2024. I know we just bought our tickets. The Morrill family bought our tickets to come to Milwaukee. Be our first time up there. You've won there before, so I guess that you've got a lot to defend.
I've got a box at home. Got about 80 watches at home. Gifts, awards, sponsorship stuff. I wear one. I wear this watch or my Apple Watch. On the back of this watch, none of us can see it in the light right now, but on the back of this watch, it is etched 7/12/2015, the initials SB. Back then, Tag Heuer would give you a watch every time you won a race as a driver, and they would put the date and your initials in it. Because it was my first one on an oval, Sebastian gave it to me for Christmas that year.
That's amazing.
And it's this or my Apple Watch. That's it. I mean, I want to know how much is sitting in this box. That's it. And I love Milwaukee, man. The great land.
It's going to be fun. We're making a week of it. Got the full 4-day ticket, bringing the camper, the whole thing. We got the dogs are going off to doggy daycare. Yeah, I'm excited.
It's an overnight stay for them. For four days.
They're going. They signed up with the Rover. They're going to be Airbnb'd. So we are ready to party at Milwaukee.
Here's what I love about Milwaukee, and that whole West Allis like corridor. There you go. Cow. Oh, and you're going to have your spotted.
Yeah.
Is that so? In Long Beach, where I'm from, Southern California, every third building is a Catholic church. And the west side of Indianapolis, every third building is a tanning bed or a, you know, laundry and tan or a Starbucks. Every third building in West Allis is a bar. And we won that race in 2015 with you know, KVSH and Jimmy Vassar, the first guy to ever sponsor me when I raced, by the way. And one of my biggest mentors in life, James Sullivan, Sully Sullivan from the Vassar Sullivan is what it is now. And we're pumped. I had shoulder reconstruction surgery Monday morning at 6 a.m. that week. I took the red eye home from Raleigh, North Carolina from a global rallycross race with Vassar Sullivan. Surgery Monday. I was on my meds Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And on Thursday, I had to stop taking my pain meds.
So you could drive.
So I could spot. Because I was eligible for a random from IndyCar. And I can't be under the influence. And so I'm in this thing, this brace, right? We win this race. I'm shaking. I'm crying. I've got an audio clip. 8 minutes. Or it's like 8 minutes of our conversations throughout the race. A friend of mine from IMSP knew how important this was to me. She edited up our radio and like sent this to me 2 weeks later. Still have it on my phone. I got in tears telling Sebastian, like, hey, bud, you're going to victory lane. I'm coming to you. Like, you can hear it in my voice. I'm bawling like a child. Get to victory lane. First thing I want to do is grab a Vicodin. He's like, dude, I'm hurting. Like the stress of my body in those closing 20 laps, like, excuse me, coupled with everything else. Dude, I am hurting. Do you think somebody would have some water in victory lane? So it started with grabbed a pain pill and a bottle of Fireball and back at the transporter. And we're hanging out. We're vibing, man. Like nothing else in the world matters. And Jimmy goes, I got the spot wheels. I'm like, what's that, Uncle Jimmy? And he goes, it's called the fourth base. I'm like, can you buy me dinner first? And he goes, nah, man, it's a bar. I called ahead. Typical townie bar. We're all going to the fourth base this year because I haven't been there since this night. That's the last time I was ever in West Allis. We get into this place. Best lobster tail, best crab legs, best filet. Strongest drinks, and I'm anxious to see if my team. I've been still in team gear, bro, because changing shirts was so hard for me.
Yep.
That like at this point of the night in the bar, when the bar owner is just go ching ching ching, whoa, you want another one of these? You want another one of those? Want some more crab legs? Want some more scallops? Like, we're like, how late can we stay? And they're like, gentlemen, we're so proud of you guys. We'll stay as late as you need to. This is Wisconsin. We'd never close if we don't want to. And at some point, they helped me out of my sling. And they had to like help me like peel with my arm being like this, peel my shirt off of me. And it got like the dude came out of the back with like a hammer and nails, like 3-inch nails.
It's on the wall.
Last time I was there, it was on the wall. So I'm really anxious to go back.
We'll have to go. We'll go with you. We'll find.
Yeah, it. We will. We will. Cause I was thinking about going up a day early for that one too, just cause it's such a cool town, man. The vibe is so wild. A lot of great memories there as a kid. Really good memories.
So that's the race. Like they've also added a race at Thermal, which is not for people like me.
Cannot afford
five grand for a couple. But Milwaukee is it's a Midwest classic. It's back on the calendar. It needs fan support, and that's why the day tickets went on sale.
We get to camp really close.
I think we're bringing about 8 or 10 people so far.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like if you want to talk about the history and the lore. Look, if we're going to run Milwaukee,
it's Labor Day weekend.
I want Milwaukee to be back on the weekend after the Indy 500, how it should be in my historical old man brain. But
well, Texas is gone, so now you can.
Thank you. But I will say
the Trois is in the way, but we'll deal with that later.
Yeah, the Trois. What's really cool, though, man, is like a lot of the real racers, legends of the IndyCar, like we talked about Michael, right? We talked about Jimmy Vassar. Those guys will tell you out second to Indianapolis. And Milwaukee has it. Like, yeah. Milwaukee, to win at the Milwaukee Mile.
It's a 100-year facility as well. Right? Yeah, we talked about Lamar. Yeah. We talked about Indy.
To win at the Milwaukee, and it's not easy. It's a road course with two left-hand turns. Like, there is nothing straightforward about running the Milwaukee Mile, period.
And you get to do two cracks at it.
That's pretty cool.
Back to back.
That's pretty cool.
Double header.
All right. We're a little over the time we planned.
Are we?
I think we're probably what 80 minutes, 70 minutes.
About eighty.
Free baseball.
Yeah, it's almost the end of a full length movie here. Any final thoughts from you, Sarah? Anything you wanted to bring up? Anything we've forgotten? Anything you want to plug?
Nothing I can think of.
You did great.
Other than happy birthday to my dad.
Yeah,
my dad's birthday.
It's his 50th birthday today.
Celebrating. Congratulations, 50 once Kevin. Again.
Yeah. He's been doing that longer than you guys have been married.
Oh, much longer.
You did a great job tonight.
Oh,
a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's every two or three times a year, she gives Zach a break and he has to go on the main show.
Yeah.
Go do the big thing.
Or disappear.
That's if it wasn't for Zach is the glue that holds us together, legitimately.
I just show up.
2 weeks ago, we did a show because Zach made us do it.
That's
he's here so he doesn't get fined.
I like skills.
Volunteer job.
Yeah. One of my skills is showing up. I'm just like, I put stuff on my schedule and I'm like, okay, I'll be there. And sometimes I sign up for too much stuff, but I show up.
He answers the bell. Chris, this has been awesome, man. I don't know if there's anything else we forgot, anything you wanted to bring up. But this is our
reality is we could have sat here forever, right? But no, thank you guys. It's really cool. Really pumped to just get to the holidays here. Had to Florida see my parents. Haven't had Christmas with my parents since 2015.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be fun. Play a little golf, hopefully. And for, the thousands that are listening right now, like, just keep doing this, like, keep supporting these guys and keep supporting all the small towns and the groups that are trying to push out content, because whether you're ready for it or not, man, the content is our future. And so thank you guys. Super pumped. I'll be back. I'll come see you. I'll be back.
Open door anytime. We appreciate it. Next week, we'll be back on Thursday. I know the Patreon will probably be a little special Christmas edition. And it may just be a host only episode. We've not scienced that out. But I don't think we're scheduled to miss any. The way the holidays fall this year, we don't have to skip a week because of Christmas.
Yeah.
It's
a weekend Christmas.
It perfectly aligns.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
How do you do this show when you're on your like 19-week straight camping adventure?
Well, this show's on a Thursday and we leave on Fridays.
We do Tuesdays during the month of May.
Yeah, during the month of May, we generally flex to a Tuesday night.
Because camping pull-ins on Thursday.
And on occasion...
Well, and you better be careful pulling into that lot, let me tell you.
The first two weekends in May, we're in lot two.
Yeah, you got to go real slow getting in there.
And then, lot six, the final for the big one. Lot two is so convenient, though, man. You just walk... You're right outside the pagoda. I could be to your pit stand in 90 seconds from my camper with fresh beer.
Do you want to know the worst part about not having a guy like Bourdais in IndyCar still? It's all those years that I had his second pass for the driver owner lot. And that was the best. It was just like, bloop, I'm just going to pull it. Yep, that's me and my old beater. That's me. That's right. Just coming through, parked next to these three Mercedes and this Alpha. And
The greatest thing at Speedway now is waking up at the track.
Yeah,
it's so nice that I fought the traffic on Thursday. I'm done. I'm in. I don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, I dig it.
You just live there. All right. It's been spectacular. We appreciate it very much. We'll catch you all next week.
See ya.